This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 8. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Well, welcome to the show, Gareth. We had Berners here momentarily, didn't we?
We did, and it was fantastic whilst he was here, and I just hope that he comes back soon.
Yes, I think his train went into a tunnel or something, but he was on the move and we lost him. So you may hear from Berners again later in the show. That's the teaser to keep everybody interested. But let's talk a little bit about cricket, and I saw an article recently from Greg Chappell talking about captaincy, and we often talk about the tactical side of captaincy and then the man management side of captaincy, but it's not often talked about. There's an overlap between the two, and that's one thing that Greg Chappell mentioned in an article this week, how it's the captain's job to keep the players interested, and you do that by setting interesting fields. So that was an interesting angle on things.
Yeah, I think that's a very simplistic way, and I don't think he actually really meant that it was as simple as that. And a lot of the points that he made in the article were about how you link in with each individual, because ultimately we're a game of individuals, aren't we?
Yeah.
And it's about blending all of that together. And one of the things that he found to be really useful to him was keeping the fielding, setting different fields that made the game interesting at regular points in the game. And I think it's something that, if we think about captains, and he mentioned Mark Taylor in his article, and he was very, very good at that. And obviously I worked with somebody like Michael Vaughan, who was absolutely brilliant at that. And whilst it was often seen as a tactic to scupper somebody in the opposition, or a tactic to try and throw the attention of somebody within the opposition, it was often a case of trying to keep, as Chappell says, trying to keep his own players interested as well. Because we can get very bog standard with our fields. And you know, one of the greatest leaders that I've ever spent time with is Graham Smith. But if there was one area of his game that isn't maybe at the same level as a Michael Vaughan, then it would be in field settings, because he can get a little bit too bog standard at times. And I know it's something that he's worked at, but it's something that he doesn't find particularly natural to him.
And that is one of the criticisms that's often levelled at Dhoni as well, isn't it? That he tends to set a standard field, and the argument, of course, being that he doesn't really have a lot of choice, because his pace bowling attack isn't the greatest in the world. But I guess Chappell is saying, well, if you think about it a little bit more, then maybe you can do more than you first think.
Yeah, I think it is a bit like that. But some people can do that very easily, and other people find that difficult, don't they? Because some people have got a really strategic mind that's very natural to them, and others haven't. And it was interesting speaking with Andrew Strauss recently, who would be quite open and say that he can be a little bit too bog standard when it comes to field settings and ideas and plans. What he had was Stuart Broad in his team, and he always used to call Broadie his out-of-the-box captain.
Yeah,
and he used to go to Broadie and say, come on, mate, what do you reckon here? What can we do here to change the flow of a game, or to ask a question of the batters that we don't normally have? But I think that's huge levels of self-awareness from Strauss, that he recognises that isn't his strength, but actually he's got people around him that he can tap into, which will make that a positive move for the team that he's leading. So that, you know, self-awareness is massive, isn't it, when you're leading, because we aren't good at everything. Nobody has been perfect in every single area, but probably within your team, you've got people that you can use and use their skills appropriately, like Broadie coming up with a bit of a harebrained idea that works. And then all of a sudden you get a couple of wickets and you're back in the game.
Yeah, it shows that there's times to draw on other people as well. And we've got we've managed to pipe Berners in from distant lands. Where are you, Berners?
King's Cross. It's absolute chaos. The networks are loaded full of businessmen chatting deals and whatnot, and all I want to do is talk cricket.
Well, we've got you on the line, which is the main thing. We made a start without you on the show, and we've already put the world to rights in terms of captaincy. So what are your views on captaincy? Is it a great art, or is it a science?
Bit of both, isn't it? Need I think it's all about people management, captaincy to me, with a bit of science back behind it. But essentially, if you win your players over and their part, they buy into you, then I think you're on the right track.
Yeah, well, you're talking sense that I think we both agree with there, isn't that right, Gareth?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. So well done on talking sense. I think that's the first time in 2013. Great stuff, Berners.
Thanks a lot. I'm back with a vengeance. It's because I'm in King's Cross, you see, with all these highly intelligent businessmen.
Is that what it is? It's the bowler hat, the power of the bowler hat.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you're just in time to give us the yes-no round for this week. Of course, every week there's three questions that Gareth and I get to answer with just yes or no, no matter how much else that we want to say. So, Berners, if you can fire up the laptop and let us know what those three questions are this week.
Okay, the first question. Parbajan is a modern-day great spinner.
No.
No.
Second question. The IPL has changed player priorities.
Yes.
Yes.
Question three. Practice style, craft playing style.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so it's time for the questions round. A couple of questions every week that we have entered in to the show and the chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can find out all about those online coaching courses. They're video-based in the main, but you've got all kinds of exciting interactive stuff going on there. You've got ebooks, you've got worksheets, you've got quizzes that are going on, and just ways to keep you engaged in the content and give you something to do when you go to your next net session, whether you bat, whether you bowl, whether you field, or whether you do all any other kind of crazy thing to do with cricket, because we've got plenty of courses going on there. So, Berners, you've got the two questions this week. What's the first one out of the blocks?
Our first question comes in from Nick, and he's asking, what effect does sleep have to do with performance in the game, and what are the ways in which you could correct bad sleeping habits? Probably not stay in the pub till 3 a.m, Nick, but let's see what the panel think.
Yeah, that's a really good start. Sleep is a bit of a mystery, even amongst those who are experts in the area of sleep. But one thing we do know is if you're not getting enough sleep, it definitely affects your performance, even if it's quite a small amount of not getting enough sleep. So even though it's not an exact science, I think one of the keys to sleep when it comes to cricket performance is just feeling like that you have had enough sleep. And some people need less than others. You know, you have the classic 8 hours, which is an average of everybody. And, you know, some people can be okay with 8 hours, and some people need a bit longer and some people need a bit less. So it's one of those things that you have to experiment with a little bit. But if you can get yourself into a pattern, that's another thing that the experts talk about, is getting into a pattern where you're regularly sleeping within, you know, roughly going to bed at the same time every night and roughly getting up at the same time every morning, then you're in a nice rhythm of what you should be doing. And one thing that is very common is that if you work during the week, or you are at school or college during the week, then you're getting up early in the mornings, and then you decide to have a lie-in on the weekend, and that sort of puts you out of, or can put you out of, a rhythm with sleep. Where do you come from when it comes to sleep, Gareth?
Well, yeah, I mean, all of those things are very apparent. So one of the things that I learned a number of years ago is that when we sleep in 2 hour cycles. Mm-hmm. And you'll often find that sometimes you might only have 6 hours sleep in a night, but you wake up feeling fairly refreshed. Whereas if you wake up after 7 hours of sleep, and get up, you can feel knackered because you haven't got through the whole of that cycle. So you've actually woken yourself up during one of your 2 hour cycles. So we always encourage players to, you know, 8 hours is preferable and it's a guide, but some people need more, some people need less. But if you do it in you know, multiples of 2 hours, then you can't go too far wrong. And that's something that stood a lot of good players you know, really well over the last few years that I've worked with people. But that came out of a significant amount of research from, I think it was Loughborough University and EIS, Research Institute of Sport, and it's something that I found to be particularly useful. The other thing is that we're understanding more about personality now. And obviously, when we're in the field, we want people to extrovert both in their actions and maybe in their output in terms of noise on the field and their behaviours and their enthusiasm. And for an extrovert, that's a very easy thing to do, and they'll probably get energy from doing that. Whereas lots of the players that we work with nowadays are introverted, and it's going to take a lot of energy away from them to do all of those things that we expect to see in terms of action and noise and all of that stuff on the field. So you've got to expect that those guys need to actually get their energy levels back up. And the way that they're going to do that is by sleeping in the change room or find a quiet area to do something, you know, to get some the 20-minute power nap in or whatever. And in the years gone by, a lot of players would shout out to you when somebody was having a sleep, oh, night time's for sleeping and you should get more sleep at night. But actually, the more we understand about personality is that the introverts, when they do extrovert behaviour, it's going to tire them out and they need to replenish their sleep stocks. So bear that in mind as well, because not everybody is an extrovert all day long, even though you might want them to be that when they're at backward point or at slip.
I love a changing room nap, especially in a 2020 game, or failing that, long on's quite a good spot as well.
I mean, there is evidence that, you know, a nap, you know, they talk about power naps, and, you know, people can, you can certainly see that as fertile ground for taking the mickey out of somebody. But, you know, a nap can be a powerful way to energize yourself, as you say, Gareth. So, you know, there shouldn't be any, there shouldn't be any stigma around sleeping. If you feel like you need a 10 minutes or 20 minutes here or there, then why not? It's plenty of people, adults, do that without any problems at all in all walks of life. So why not be able to do it in sport? I was going to say that there's an app, isn't there, for a lot of these smartphones. I said that like an 80-year-old man, these smartphones. There's an app for iPhones and Android phones where it monitors your sleep rhythms and works out when the best time is for you to wake up, and then can help you set your alarm. And if you're in a state a little bit earlier than your alarm of being ready to wake up, then it wakes you up a little bit earlier. Have you seen those, Gareth?
Yeah, I have, and they're very good. And a friend of mine actually developed one of the first versions of our app, which manages people in their sleep pattern throughout the night, but also manages them in power naps, which you alluded to earlier. And he's both a very clever man and a very rich man now, as a result of all of that. But that's one of the guys that I learn a lot about this sleep pattern stuff from. And, you know, we look at teams, and Chappell talked about it in his article earlier about how different people are. So if you take the three of us, if I was sleeping in the changing room, then you'd have a pretty good idea that I didn't get enough sleep the night before, and I might not have been doing something that I should have been doing, because I'm extroverted, and if I fielded, that gives me more energy. Whereas the two of you guys, whilst you can do extrovert behaviour, you're more solitary in the way that you gather your energy. So you would probably require more opportunity to get your energy back after a long fielding session where you've been noisy and energised out in the field. So that's an example. We're a team here working on a podcast for Pitch Vision, but actually we're different, and therefore we need to put our sleep patterns around us, particularly around games, slightly differently.
And the other thing I was interested in is, if you are in a situation where you feel like you're not getting enough sleep, whether that is you've got a bit of insomnia, or you've had a big night out, or something happens and you've got a game the next day, or maybe you're just worried because it's a big match. That happens quite a lot, doesn't it? You get worried, you can't sleep, you're stressed out, and then you don't get enough sleep, and then you're worried it's going to affect your performance the next day. How would you approach somebody who feels like they haven't had enough sleep and they've got a game that day?
Well, I'd get them to, because their energy has got to be right for the game, isn't it? So, you know, if that person is usually really bouncy all day long and you're noticing that they're not, the key thing is that they can use whatever energy that they've got left within the hours of play that you need them to apply it in and get results for you. So I would talk to them about managing themselves. And that's a normal thing, isn't it? Because we don't just wake up every day feeling absolutely tip top. Some days we don't, and that's part of being humans. And again, being a coach, we should notice these things and then apply some strategies with that individual that allows them to give themselves the best chance of being successful. So if somebody is a bit tired and it's noticeable that they're tired, then the key times for them to be switched on is when they're batting, when they're bowling, and at key points in the field, isn't it? And you talk to them about managing their energy and managing their concentration levels, even if they are a bit depleted.
Yes, it's an opportunity to learn, even if things haven't gone exactly your way. And as there's the slight difficulty, I suppose, if you don't know what that's, you don't know what the cause of the lack of the sleep necessarily is. It might be through worry. It might be through just deciding that they want to stay up and, you know, play the latest PlayStation 3 game until 2 o'clock in the morning. I guess there's that added layer of complexity on top of that as well.
Yeah, there is. But I think the good coaches are the ones that pick those things up by noticing stuff and also by listening really intently to what people are saying. And our actions and our words often betray what's going on inside, doesn't it? You know, if we have got a worry, then it's not very often that somebody won't exhibit some behaviour that can be an indicator that there is a worry in there. And that's what really good coaches do, whether they're working at club level or whether they're working at international level. They know their people. They know the signs that tell them whether that person is right or not right. They listen to the words properly, and it gives you indicators, and then you can perform a strategy or have a conversation based on what you know, based on the indicators that come from that person. And that is coaching in a nutshell to me.
Yeah. What's your view on sleep? How much do you need, Berners?
Oh, not too much. Awkward sleeper, I am. Fidgeter.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing for me, or amateur cricket as well, you know, a lot of these pros, I guess, they wake up, it's their job. You'd expect them to be ready, and they do that day in, day out. For an amateur who wakes up on a Saturday, who's been at work all week, and then used to a lie-in on the off-season if they're not doing much, I guess you've got all of that added complications. I mean, we meet at 11 o'clock or so for a 50-over game, you know, traditionally, and some of the state of the boys on a Saturday morning looks like they've just been through a combine harvester. But I guess that's what you're dealing with, is that underneath all of that, you've got guys who approach it differently, people who can play under a hangover and don't really care too much, and other guys who won't go out on the Friday night and are fully focused, and they're probably the ones who are up worrying. Left, right and centre, have a good solid breakfast, and probably inevitably the ones who nick off for zero. But I guess that's just the way it goes. Yeah, I think Gara's not nailed it on the head, that it's the personality of the person and knowing exactly what their requirements are. To, you know, we're all adults or even juniors, you know, sleeping is a pretty basic thing, isn't it? If you're tired, you get rest. But yeah, I like a good kip.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everyone likes a good kip.
As the boss would probably back me up on.
Yeah, but not during working hours. That's the problem.
Not during working hours.
There's been recently, I've been reading up about sleep as well, and there's been a lot of talk about making sure that if you're having trouble going to sleep, making sure that you're not looking at a screen just before you go to bed, because the screen is pushing blue light into your face, and it's tricking you to thinking that it's not time to go to sleep yet.
Which is probably what 98% of people in the whole world do, is watch television directly before they go to sleep.
Yeah, or read even things like going on the computer or reading on your iPad or something like that. That's an interesting area, and I don't know how proven that is, but it's certainly an interesting area. And another interesting area is that what ambient light there is around in your room as well, because, you know, if you're in a modern room, there's bound to be sort of some kind of flashing light somewhere, some piece of equipment that's plugged in, and often that can affect the quality of your sleep. So have you heard anything like that, Gary, about light and how much light you're exposed to before you go to sleep and while you're asleep?
I have, but I haven't actually, I'll be honest, I haven't actually applied that into any sort of strategies around coaching or anything like that. But I have heard those things, and you know, I've got friends that have got lights that sit next to their bed that help them to get to sleep, because they're a softer light, and you know, so I do, I'm aware of that stuff, but it isn't something that I've worked within any sort of coaching strategies yet.
I guess it's one of those things where you have to be sure of it before you can bring it into a strategy. You don't want to just start throwing things in too willy-nilly, do you? Because you don't know whether they whether they work or not, or whether it's just one of these things that has picked up a bit of traction because someone said it on Twitter once.
Yeah, exactly right, mate. And you've got to be really careful, haven't we? Because we've got the credibility of ourselves as coaches, so we need to be able to stand over all of the things that we're encouraging our players to do. And as soon as we don't, then word gets about and our effectiveness goes downhill because people don't trust us quite so much. So it's massively important that we get right before we use that within any strategy.
But just if you are thinking of that and you're having trouble sleeping, you think, well, maybe I will experiment with maybe turning the TV off an hour before I go to bed, something like that. Then there is a little app called which you can get for. I know you can get for Windows. I don't know whether you can get it for Apple computers or not, but certainly for Windows, which is called Flux, F-L-U-X, and that changes the color of the light on your computer screen. So if you're working on the computer late at night, it changes it to a more yellow light, which your brain thinks is sunset. So it makes it a little bit better. It's a free app, so there's no harm in giving it a try, even if it doesn't work. So that might be a little tip that might help somebody with sleeping. Give it a try, see how they get on with it.
Good one.
Next question's from Paul. He's been having a few problems playing off of his legs, and he's wondering what drills he can do to help him improve this. He's saying it's hard to practice at training because his bowlers aren't capable of providing him with enough deliveries on his legs. I strongly recommend he comes to my net sessions where he will have plenty of deliveries in that area and he can really work that issue out. But it's certainly a problem of mine, so I'll be interested to know what you guys come up with.
You don't want bowlers deliberately trying to bowl leg stump half volleys, do you, Gareth?
Well, you don't, but I'm a bit like Burns's bowlers. I think I've got one of the best leg stump half volleys in the game, I think. So most of our kids at school play well off their legs because they get quite a few balls in that area from me.
So what strategy would you get for someone who maybe he's playing at club level, he doesn't really get a chance for throwdowns, but he knows he's weak off his legs? What strategies can he employ?
One of the main reasons why somebody can be weak off of their legs, and there could be a whole heap of reasons, but we've got one of our eyes works best at tracking movement, which obviously a cricket ball coming towards us from a bowler, we have to track movement. And a lot of players don't actually get their appropriate eye because it can be different for different people. It's nothing to do with your dominant eye. Well, it could have something to do with your dominant eye, but equally it might not be your dominant eye as well. So if somebody's getting hit on the pads a lot or is struggling off of that, I will always experiment, and I've got a couple of tests that I can do which works out which motor eye it is. But just in a basic net, if you're missing a load of balls off your pads, then just try, have a look at your stance, have a look to see which one of your two eyes is most watching the ball the hardest, or giving yourself the best opportunity to watch the ball the hardest, and then change your stance to allow the other eye to have a go and see what happens. So a lot of people just move their front leg, don't they? We see people move their front foot in their setup to allow the back to come through, and that's great. But if you're a left eye motor eye person as a right-handed batter, you don't necessarily need to open up your stance at all to access it. If you're a right-eye, motor-eye person, then you probably would be better off opening up as a right-handed batter and opening up that toe to allow your right eye to get onto the ball a bit earlier. So that's one of the things that I've learned relatively recently in the last year that's had a huge effect on a number of players that weren't strong off their pads, just by adjusting their stance to make sure that the appropriate eye is tracking the ball. Will give them the best chance of hitting those balls off their legs. And that takes away anything technical, anything that might be up for debate amongst different coaches. You really want to get the best motor eye, your motor eye, on the line of the ball for as long as you possibly can.
That's interesting. So if you're talking about a right-handed batsman facing a right-handed bowler, and they're strongest on their right eye, then they would be better off being more open?
Slightly open, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Whereas my motor eye is my left eye. So I can actually stand really sideways and still watch the ball fine and sit and still see the ball fine and still play off my legs fine. My dad was a good player, and he was unlucky enough when he was born. He was a forceps baby because he was breech.
Right.
One of the forceps severed his right optical nerve. Ooh. So he ended up with one eye, okay, which was his left eye. Mm. Fortunately, his left eye was the eye, if it had had two eyes, which would have tracked motion. So he could stand just looking out of one eye, and it made no difference to his batting whatsoever.
Right, right, because it was so, it was already dominant.
Absolutely, right. It was already hit the one that he tracked movement.
Yeah.
So that's just lucky. It was unlucky in the first place, so obviously it happened, but it was lucky that it took out that other eye in terms of his cricket. And as a result, everybody used to say, how the hell do you score as many runs as you do? Well, he didn't know at the time, but we've now worked out that's the reason.
Question for you. Mm. So you were discussing here about eyes and stronger eyes, and that can obviously help in determining where you stand. What about head position? If, for example, you're a left or right-handed batsman and your head is going the other way from where it should be, scaling it back, would that not be the most important issue in this? Creating the platform from your head position?
Yeah, well, it could be. It's a great question, Berners. It could be. Again, going back to some of the stuff that I've talked about recently on here, there are four ways of moving, and three of the four ways of moving, and not just in cricket, but just in general life, that would be really apparent. So if you've got your head outside the line of your feet, okay, i.e. your head is going towards cover or extra cover, and the ball's coming into your toes, okay, then it would have a negative effect on your ability to get the back to the ball. So it's a great question. Whereas one of the four movement profiles, actually you require a little bit of your center of gravity to be going beyond that perfectly balanced position. And you need to have your head and your shoulder moving a little bit towards mid-off in order to access that ball. So it's a great question. And probably if you split it, it's not quite like this in the general population, but if you split it four ways, because you've got four profiles, and 25% of the population would be able to cope with having their head slightly outside the line of a ball, whereas the 75% of the population wouldn't. Now, it doesn't work quite like that, but that gives you a guide of who can and who can't. And we do see it, don't we? So I remember Mark Waugh batting. Okay, and we can all remember Mark Waugh batting. He would often look like he was toppling over, but clip the ball very easily between square leg and mid wicket, and he would be in that 25%.
Well, that's a fascinating one, because of course one of the big no-nos is that idea of falling over, or as you said, Gareth, toppling over. But yet there are people who can cope with a certain amount of that.
Absolutely right.
I know what's often taught in that predicament as well, is often to stand a little bit taller, and also with the whole emphasis of that forward notion of your chin and your body getting that forward movement, which should keep you in, if not a neutral, but allow you to go either leg side or off side easier than if you're kind of counter-sunk in a position. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, and that is what's generally taught. But, one of the four styles requires their head and shoulder to lead, and often their head and shoulder is slightly outside the line of their feet, which we would call in conventional coaching terms being off balance. But that's actually what they need to do in order to initiate movement a little bit.
So dragging it back, let's drag it back to Paul's question, just to make sure we don't lose sight of that, even though this is an interesting discussion. Yeah. The advice we're looking at is that when he's in the nets, he shouldn't be working specifically on that, on playing off his legs, because he's not necessarily going to get that kind of ball, but he's going to work out which is his eye that tracks the ball, and try and get that a little bit earlier onto things and see what difference that makes.
Yeah, absolutely right. So if he's presently sideways on, so if Paul's presently a sideways on player and he's not accessing the ball very well off of his pads, then just try opening yourself up a little bit so you get your right eye looking at the ball more so. So it's basically not like Peter Willey or somebody or Shiv Chandra, Paul, but you just open yourself up to make sure that the right eye gets on the ball and see how you go. Because if you're a right-handed batter and you're getting hit on the pads a lot, it would be unlikely. I'd be really surprised if you weren't a right eye dominant person.
Okay.
And when I say right eye dominant, meaning that your motor eye, that you track movement with, is probably your right eye. So you need to adjust your stance to allow your good eye at tracking movement to get at the ball.
Okay, Paul, we'll give that a try. Get back to us. Let us know if that is working for you or not. and we'll head into the soapbox. Okay, so this week, Gareth is on the soapbox. He's got 60 seconds to tell us about something that he likes. Gareth, over to you.
Well, I'm going to talk about women's cricket, and anybody who listened to last week's show and the one before actually would have realised that I was out in India and I watched a lot of it. And I went there with a view on women's cricket, which was a bit of a distant one, to be honest. And I've come back from India watching women's cricket in a different way, and almost, and I said it last week, but almost in the same way as I watched the women's tennis, which is a great spectacle, just like the women's cricket is. But I watch it in a different way than I'd watch Federer and Nadal and Andy Murray going about their business, because the skills are slightly different, the tactics are slightly different, the ability to force power through a ball is slightly different. And they work out different approaches to getting the same results, which makes it a different game. So talking with a marketeer, somebody who understands how to put things in front of the public and move it on, he's looking at ways of changing the way that we view women's cricket rather than just doing a cut and paste job of the men's game upon it. And so I ask you, when you're watching the next game of women's cricket on the television, to view it in the same way as you would do a women's tennis match. And if you can do that, then I'm sure you'll have more enjoyment watching it and probably understand it a little bit better. That certainly worked for me.
Okay, so that is the end of the show for this week. Before we go, we've just got a couple of things that we need to sort out. The first of which, who's going to win the prize this week? We had some interesting discussions. Nick's question around sleep and Paul's question around being able to play off your legs. And that was a detailed and varied discussion. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
Well, I'm going to go with Nick's, actually, because we haven't come across sleeping habit stuff before. But as a result of a good question, I got to learn some things that I didn't know, including what apps to use and how to change the light on your iPad or your laptop. So I thought that was a really good discussion that you don't often hear. So this week's winner is Nick.
Yeah, congratulations, Nick. You win a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to find out more information about those courses, head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the courses link to find out more. Now, Berners, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show, have their question answered and also have their chance to win the prize, what would they need to do?
They can give us a call, the number 02088 167 691, or drop us an email, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, it is. We also have a Twitter account. It's at PB Cricket Coach, and you can find us on Facebook if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. If you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy on iTunes, then you'll find us there, and you can subscribe to the show, leave a review if you wish. And if you don't want to subscribe using iTunes, we'll use something else. Just head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link, and there'll be all the instructions on what you need to do there. That's all for this week. So until next time, when Berners, what station will Berners be in next? What part of the Monopoly board will he be on? We don't know.
I'm doing the rounds of the underground. Lucky dip.
We'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, coach. Cheers, guys.